You're listening to the Talking Information Center. My name is Jean. Today's date is February 18th, and I will be reading from the Sun Chronicle. Wrentham's Miracle Boy to serve as a Hasbro Children's Hospital ambassador. His parents call Jasper Casey their miracle child, but a mystery also lurks around Jasper. The Wrentham boy spent the first 119 days of his life in the neonatal intensive care unit at Hasbro Children's Hospital in Providence, whisked away from his parents, Lenka and Craig Casey, before they even had a chance to hold their newborn son. What has followed is a more than seven-year-long complex medical journey in which the boy has continued defying the odds. There was nothing about my pregnancy or Jasper's full-term birth that even hinted at what we would ultimately go through, Lenka recalls. I don't ever want to think about where we'd be without Hasbro's Children's. What happens within those walls is beyond words. Born, struggling to breathe, retaining dangerous levels of carbon dioxide, and with profound muscle weakness, Jasper underwent a battery of tests that failed to provide answers. Stabilized after nearly 4 months, he went home with a tracheostomy, ventilators he needed 24/7 to breathe, and a gastrometry tube for feeding. 9 pieces of equipment went everywhere Jasper did, whether room to room or out of the house. The family also had the support of a team of 16 Hasbro Children's specialists who meticulously trained the boy's parents to manage every aspect of his complex care and who would be available to assist Lenka and Craig 24/7. I couldn't count the number of times we were terrified, Craig said. Every car trip or risk of a power outage was a literal life and death situation. Thankfully, we always had someone to call. Friends helped out by organizing a GoFundMe page so that the family could buy a generator. Jasper realized a major turning point at age 3, undergoing an 8-hour partial airway reconstruction at Hasbro Children's. Doctors took a piece of his rib to rebuild his trachea, and he spent days in a medically induced coma recovering. 16 days later, he was back home, tracheostomy free. Once tethered to machines, Jasper is now thriving. At first, Jasper was nonverbal. However, he and his parents learned American Sign Language and also used a computer tablet so Jasper could explain his needs. Now he is the life of the party, or as his mother calls him, a talker. We call him the senator, Lenka said. He walks into a room full of adults and starts waving to people and saying hello and holding babies. Oh, yes, he's very comfortable around adults. He learned to swim. He loves sports, gaming, and being with his friends. In 2024, he celebrated living longer without a tracheostomy than with one. Last year, he played soccer and baseball in Wrentham's Youth Sports League. He is a second grader at the Delaney Elementary School. Some of his teachers don't even know his history, Lenka said. You'd have no idea about what he's gone through other than his many scars, which he'd be happy to show you, Craig said, laughing. But the mystery still remains. To this day, doctors don't have any idea why Jasper was born with profound breathing and muscle weakness. Jasper's doctors and parents were hopeful that a full genome sequencing would be able to provide a diagnosis. Genome sequencing reads an individual's DNA to identify, diagnose, or predict genetic conditions by detecting specific variants, offering comprehensive insights into health, ancestry, and medication response. This was important, especially if the Caseys wanted to have a second child or if Jasper wanted children. But Jasper's case ended up being among the very rare cases where genome sequencing failed to provide an answer. That's created some stress for his parents. Jasper visits 16 specialists once or twice a year to make sure there are no signs of a setback. So far, all is good. He has no limitations, Craig said, but we can't say he's progressing. It's always in the back of our minds that he could regress. But Jasper has some responsibilities in the coming year. In 2025, he took the stage with Lenka at the Hasbro Children's Heroes Ball and was an instant star with his gigantic smile and personality. Jasper was such a hit that this year the Providence Hospital has named it its 2026 Champion Child. At Hasbro Children's Champion Child, and having battled his medical condition with strength and courage, Jasper will spend the year as an ambassador, highlighting the life-saving impact pediatric hospitals have on children and families, the hospital said. His mother said it will be an honor. Every single day is a blessing. We will always have more questions than answers, Lenka said. But to see Jasper today, you'd never know all he's been through. Foxborough officials continue fight for World Cup security funding. Frustration continues to grow among town officials as they fight for funding for security to host the World Cup soccer games this summer at Gillette Stadium. Town officials, again at a select board meeting Tuesday night, vowed not to approve an entertainment license for the high-profile soccer games unless they get funding and other requests fulfilled. The town applied for a federal grant of about $7.8 million for security, training, building, equipment expenses, and medical and communication needs, but the funding hasn't arrived. Representatives of the Boston Host Committee appeared before the board but gave no definitive answers. All we're asking is for a collaboration that gets the answer as to who will pay, Select Board Chairman Bill Yunkna said. It's obviously an NFL game on steroids. It's the equivalent of 7 Super Bowls here. Local officials say the town doesn't have the funding and won't subject taxpayers to the bill for the international event. It baffles my mind we still have no idea where the money is coming from, board member Mark Elfman said. I'm shocked you're not sitting here and telling us where the money is coming from. This is not a moneymaker for this town. In fact, it's probably more of a headache than it's worth, board vice chairwoman Stephanie McGowan said. We are not looking to put the town of Foxborough at risk, Michael Lloyd of the FIFA World Cup Boston Committee said. The stadium had agreed to provide a liquidity agreement, which he said protects specifically all of the public safety payroll. Lloyd said that amounts to a substantial amount of the federal grant and public safety cost. He estimated it at 80% or more. The Kraft Group bid on the World Cup is leasing the stadium to FIFA, but hasn't officially committed to paying for security costs. The town and applicant, World Cup governing body FIFA, have until March 17th to complete the license, but local officials emphasize time is running out to prepare for the games that will run over 39 days starting in June. Town officials continue meeting with representatives of Governor Maura Healey's office besides Boston representatives. Local officials, though, said they are excited the town has been chosen to host the world's biggest sporting event and are confident the differences will be resolved and the games will go on. So are World Cup officials. Thousands and thousands of visitors from around the world are expected to pour into Foxborough and Boston for the World Cup and related events. 7 games are scheduled for Gillette Stadium between June 13th and July 9th. The state legislature last year approved $10 million to support World Cup-related public safety, transportation, and other expenses. The Foxborough Police Department is earmarked to receive $3.56 million in federal funds for drone security for the World Cup Games. It was announced last month. The primary source of security funding for the tournament is the FIFA World Cup Grant Program, administered through FEMA. Massachusetts is eligible for $46 million of the total $625 million funding available to the 11 American host cities. State officials have said the maximum award would be less than half of the $95 million that state and local agencies had applied for. Shooter killed ex-wife and a son in Rhode Island ice rink attack, police say. The person who opened fire Monday during a youth hockey game at a Rhode Island ice rink was specifically targeting family members, killing an ex-wife and son as many fans dived for cover while a handful rushed the shooter to stop the attack, authorities said. Pawtucket Chief of Police Tina Goncalves said the shooter's ex-wife, Rhonda Dorgan, and adult son, Aiden Dorgan, were killed and 3 others were injured. Rhonda Dorgan's parents, Linda and Gerard Dorgan, and a family friend, Thomas Geruso, all of whom remained in critical condition Tuesday afternoon. Police identified the shooter as 56-year-old Robert Dorgan, who died from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. Dorgan also went by the names Roberto Esposito and Roberto Dorgano, authorities said. Goncalves said there was no indication there would be violence at the ice rink in Pawtucket on Monday afternoon, adding that Dorgan had been to many hockey games to watch family members play before without incident. Gender identity apparently was a contributing factor to Dorgan's wife filing for divorce in 2020 after nearly 30 years of marriage. Court filings show Rhonda Dorgan initially wrote gender reassignment surgery, narcissistic personality disorder traits as reasons for filing, but crossed that out and wrote irreconcilable differences which have caused the irredeemable breakdown of the marriage. Court documents show that 2 shared the same last name even prior to getting married. Authorities have not provided additional details about the same name. Under the name Roberto Durango, Dorgan posted on X that Rhonda Dorgan hates the person who stole her husband, while posting about the couple's marital troubles in 2018. A year later, Dorgan wrote on social media, "Trans woman, 6 kids, wife not thrilled," and encouraged people to not let being transgender stop them from creating a family. A day before the shooting, Dorgan responded on X to anti-transgender posts by actor Kevin Sorbo and InfoWars conspiracy theorist Alex Jones by saying that constant criticism of transgender people is why we go berserk. Goncalves on Tuesday credited several Good Samaritans who intervened and quickly stopped the attack. At least 3 bystanders were able to contain Dorgan in the middle of the stands as the crowds fled and ran around them, but said Dorgan was still able to reach for a second firearm and died of a self-inflicted gunshot. The hockey game was live-streamed by LiveBarn, a streaming platform for youth sporting events, whose videos have been shared on social media showing players on the ice as popping sounds are heard. Chaos quickly unfolds as players on benches dive for cover. Those on the ice frantically skate toward exits, and fans flee their seats. Live Barn's social media account has been issuing warnings to those who shared the video that they do not have permission to do so. Michael Stephen, who recorded video after the shooting, recalled crying parents trying to locate their children outside the arena and young people being taken out on stretchers. "It happens far too often in our nation," Stephen told reporters. Members of the community held a vigil at Slatersville Congregational Church in North Smithfield in the evening Tuesday. "It's absolutely mind-boggling that this could happen to people we know and love and support through everything," said Amy Goulette, whose son is a hockey player in the community. Dorgan was an employee of General Dynamics Bath Ironworks, a shipbuilding facility in Bath, Maine, that contracts with the U.S. Navy, David Hench, a spokesperson for the shipyard, said Tuesday. Co-workers said Dorgan often used the first name Roberta at work. A colleague, Destiny McKenzie, recalled that she and Dorgan would often talk about family. McKenzie said Dorgan's ex-wife never came up in conversation, but a hockey-playing son was a frequent topic. "What was supposed to be some senior's only chance of playoff games is now ruined," she wrote in a message to the Associated Press. "Images that these kids and families now have to live with. That's who I send my condolences to, these families." McKenzie also said Dorgan had a bad temper that sometimes led to screaming matches with colleagues. Another co-worker said Dorgan appeared to be split on the issue of transgender acceptance, one second being proud of transitioning and the next embarrassed. That co-worker, who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of workplace reprisals, said they knew Dorgan owned guns but was unsure how many. Dorgan briefly served in the Marine Corps, enlisting on April 26, 1988, according to military records provided by the service. Less than 3 months later, on July 13th, Dorgan was separated from the service with the lowest military rank. Major Jacob B. Getty, a Marine Corps spokesman, told the Associated Press that the rapid discharge indicated Dorgan's character was incongruent with Marine Corps' expectations and standards. Getty declined to provide more details. Monday's shooting came nearly 2 months after the state was rocked by a shooting at Brown University that killed 2 students and wounded 9 others, as well as left a Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor dead. Authorities later found Claudio Neves Valente, 48, dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound at a New Hampshire storage facility. Races set for several boards in Plainville election. 3 residents are running for select board in the April 6th annual town election. There will also be 2 candidate contests for King Philip Regional School Committee, Planning Board, and Library Trustees. Former Select Board member Stanley Windeck, School Committee Chairman Stephen Albert, and Housing Authority member Andrew LaBorg are eyeing a 3-year term on the Select Board. Windeck has served for years on the Planning Board and served 2 stints on the Board of Selectmen. Albert is in his 2nd 3-year term on the school board. LaBerg also chairs the local Democratic Town Committee. The inaugural term of Select Board Vice Chairwoman Maggie Clark is expiring, but Clark didn't take out nomination papers. She ousted Windeck from the board. For a 3-year term on the King Philip Regional School Committee, Housing Authority member Alex Kenny and Michael Sharp Michelle Sharp will be facing off. Committee member Gregory Weinmeier didn't pull papers. For a five-year slot on the planning board, member Christopher Desprez and Robert Belcher will be squaring off. And in a fourth race for a three-year seat on the Board of Library Trustees, incumbent Paula Jean LaMontagne Mealy and Lily M. Quaslizona return papers. Running with no opposition for three-year terms are local school committee member Jennifer Maloney Plant, Board of Health member Robert Davis, Park Commissioner Jason Moreau, and former Selectman Charles Smith for assessor. Assessor Shannon McKenzie didn't take out papers. Clark Valkovic returned papers for a five-year housing authority seat. LaBerge had been filling the remaining 2 years of a full term. An incumbent Cynthia Bush returned papers for town clerk, also a three-year position. No one is officially running for a five-year seat on the Redevelopment Authority. All residents who took out nomination papers returned them by Friday's deadline, Bush said. The signatures of registered voters on the candidacy papers have also been certified, she said. Judge bars ICE from immigration enforcement at some Massachusetts churches. A federal judge has barred immigration and customs enforcement agents from conducting raids at churches across Massachusetts and other parts of New England. The preliminary injunction ruling, followed Friday by U.S. District Court Judge F. Dennis Saylor, came in response to a lawsuit filed in July 2025 by several local churches that argued a new federal policy exposed their congregants to immigration enforcement during services and other church-run programs. Saylor agreed the policy likely violated the Baptist and Lutheran churches' religious freedom and constitutional rights, temporarily reinstating stricter limits on how and when ICE can operate in or around houses of worship. In his ruling, Saylor called the idea of ICE agents at any church profoundly troubling. The prospect of a street-level law enforcement acting without a judicial warrant and with little or no supervisory control could conduct a raid during a church service or lie in wait to interrogate or seize congregants as they seek to enter a church is profoundly troubling, Saylor wrote. Indeed, according to the new policy, agents could conduct a raid with weapons drawn at any type of church proceeding, including a regular Sunday service, a wedding, a baptism, a christening, or a funeral, subject only to the exercise of their discretion and common sense, he wrote. In January 2025, the Department of Homeland Security and ICE issued a new policy with guidance on immigration enforcement operations at locations they called sensitive places or protected areas, such as churches or other houses of worship. The new policy allowed DHS agents, including ICE, to conduct immigration enforcement arrests, searches, or interrogations in or near a church at their own discretion, directing them to use their discretion along with a healthy dose of common sense, according to the injunction. It also gave lower-level supervisors authority to make case-by-case decisions with these operations. Since that policy was enacted, Bishop Nathan Piffo of Plaintiff New England Synod stated there has been a decrease in attendance at some churches, including in East Boston, where residents have borne witness over the past year to stepped-up violent immigration enforcement tactics. Additionally, there have been decreases in attendance at places such as food pantries and events and meetings of the Synod itself, Pippo said. There were at least two people who didn't come to Worcester for its annual New England Synod Assembly because they feared ICE would come during the assembly. They confirmed that they did not come specifically due to fears of ICE, he asserted. The Synod has budgeted for and hired Spanish interpreters for those members, he added, highlighting how the reinforcement tactics actually eat into the organization's financial bottom line. The previous DHS immigration enforcement policy, which was adopted in 2021, said DHS agents should avoid these interactions at places of worship to the fullest extent possible, and that absent exigent circumstances, agents must seek prior approval from their agency's headquarters before taking an enforcement action in or near a protected area such as a church, the filing read. A lawsuit intended to block this type of ICE enforcement was then filed in July 2025 against DHS and DHS Secretary Kristi Noem. The suit's plaintiffs are a coalition of faith groups, including the New England Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and the American Baptist Churches USA. Combined, the organizations have more than 300 affiliated churches across Massachusetts. They argue the new policy violates the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, and the Administrative Procedure Act. Saylor's injunction goes beyond reinstating the 2021 policy and gives more specific limitations. It bars ICE from conducting warrantless enforcement inside a church, within 100 feet of its entrance, or at related religious facilities such as Sunday schools, daycare centers, and adjacent church properties, unless exigent circumstances exist. And I'm afraid I have to stop there as we're out of time.